It's Sunday, the 5th of June, 2016. Happy birthday to Ed Davis and Marcus Thornton. Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Fantrax and Gaitonize. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to sponsor the podcast like Gaitonize, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become a sponsor of the program. So thank you to Gaitonize, and thank you to everyone who has left a review on iTunes throughout the season and supported the podcast in that way. Of course, as all the other podcasts have been, this one is sponsored by Fantrax, the best alternative to host your fantasy league. Whether it's basketball, whether it's football, whether it's college football, whether it's hockey, any of nine major sports are covered over on Fantrax. They offer the best free version of hosting leagues, the most options, the most customization, and then there's their premium option, which takes things up to another level. Fantrax is the place that you want to go to host your league. Yeah, ESPN and Yahoo, it's the easy way to go. We know about them, but who hasn't had a complaint about ESPN? Who hasn't had a complaint about Yahoo over the last couple of years with our slowness to open? Fantrax leagues are open all year round. Players not listed, no customization, no ability for keepers, salaries, contracts, dynasty formats, being able to take certain draft picks off teams because they've got players kept in that area. Fantrax allows all this stuff to be done. So why don't you consider taking your league across to Fantrax today? And I'm sure once you go over there and check out all the options, you'll be extraordinarily surprised. Right, we're going to be doing the Memphis Grizzlies season in review podcast today, but if you haven't checked out the 2016 NBA draft preview podcast I did with Sam Vecenie yesterday, I highly encourage you to check it out. We spoke for about an hour. We could have gone for about an hour or more, but I didn't want to take all of his time. We covered a ton of prospects, some really great information in there for you guys who you might not have been in a fantasy dynasty league. You might not have rookie drafts coming up, but you just might be interested in the NBA and want to hear about these rookie prospects from someone who's been studying them for years. So Sam is the guy to go to. He's from CBS Sports and he does all the college basketball and NBA draft stuff over there. I highly encourage you checking out the chat that we had. I think it was one of the best podcasts we've had to date. And recommend it to your friends because I think it was a tremendous chat that myself and Sam had, if I do say so myself. But for now,
let's get to it.
Also, thank you to all the entries that have come in for the Red Rock 30-team Dynasty League. There's, as you would have expected, there's way too many entrants for positions. I've decided on about 10 spots yet. I haven't let those people know. I'm still sifting through the rest of the applications. And by the middle of next week, I should have all 30 spots sorted out. If you're unaware of that, and if you still want to send in a last-minute application, you can email it to redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com telling me why you deserve to be in a 30-team dynasty league. It'll be a 9-cat head-to-head league with 30 teams, 13 players per roster. And we're doing a unique start to a draft, which is like another league that I'm in, where in the first round, you get a spot. So you might say you've got third spot, and then you get to pick where you draft. And where you pick where you draft, you get to then choose a team, because all 30 teams will be aligned with an NBA team. And in the first round, you can only pick a player from your team. So that means that there's going to be one player from each team going in the first round. So teams that are stacked, so teams like the Oklahoma City Thunder, means that Westbrook won't go in the first round. So he's going to go at the start of the second. Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, all these sort of guys you're going to be able to pick in that second round. So it does change the strategy up. So if you're interested in that, send me an email and those applications. I'll sift through all of those, the tons that I've got, and narrow it down to 30 in the next few days. The Memphis Grizzlies. What a weird, weird season for them. They started off horribly, to be honest, and then really started turning the screws and got back to being the Memphis Grizzlies. Then they suffered through a season-ending injury to Marc Gasol. Kicked things off, but they played okay when Gasol went down, but then everything started happening. Mike Conley was out with the Achilles injury, and then basically their entire team went down, and they played a stunning amount of players. 28 players suited up for the Grizzlies. That's an NBA record. Injuries just curtailed any sort of progress they could have had this season. And they still managed to get themselves into the playoffs, finishing with a 42-40 record and got smashed by the Spurs, as to be expected. And now, or not now, then after that, we saw Dave Yeager get fired as the head coach, and they bring in Fizdale from Miami as the head coach. We don't know what he's going to be like as a head coach for this team, but there's all sorts of talk with this squad of well, not this squad, a front office mismanagement, Robert Pera, with some odd decisions over the course of his tenure as an owner of this team. And obviously that brings about some of the friction that Jaeger had with the front office, which led to him being fired. All in all, it's a weird situation for Memphis, a weird situation for this team, who is the complete antithesis of what the rest of the NBA seems to be heading towards with the slow defense, big sort of scheme that they run. Will they be able to change it? I don't think they're going to be able to change it in one offseason, and they shouldn't, while their best players don't fit that sort of thing. But with Mike Conley coming out of contract and not a lock to re-sign, you'd think he's a fair chance to re-sign, but not a lock to re-sign, that could accelerate the rebuilding process. In this draft, they have pick 17 and pick 57. If you look through their roster, what have they ever done with draft picks? There is no young talent on this team whatsoever. So to get a pick in the teens is a luxury for them. Whether they make use of it or whether they trade it away, I don't think they do trade it away at this point, given the way the team is. But it's going to be nice to get an actual infusion of talent who might be decent, because some of the picks they've made have just done absolutely nothing so far. They also have pick 57 in this draft, which is unlikely to be a premium sort of spot in the draft. Let's look at their team and the impending free agents. I talked about Conley. He is an unrestricted free agent. We have Chris Anderson, the Birdman, at 37 years old, is an unrestricted free agent. He could barely play this year, so it seems unlikely that he would be brought back. Matt Barnes, at 36 years old, who's way older than you anticipate, he was a player that was trying to carry this team. He didn't necessarily do it well. He was good enough at times, and we had to own him in stretches in fantasy leagues. But overall, he wasn't superb, and he's an unrestricted free agent at the age of 36. PJ Hairston, after having his rookie option declined by the Charlotte Hornets and then was traded to the Grizzlies, he's an unrestricted free agent. And Jordan Farmer, who was one of those players who was signed at the end of the season, he is also an unrestricted free agent. We've got Lance Stephenson and Xavier Munford, who have got team options. Stevenson's is at $9.5 million. Munford's at just $870,000, so we don't know if Memphis will be exercising those options. You would think that Stevenson, they may not, but he is only 25, and he is a serve. I don't like Stevenson as a player. I don't think he's great. I think less of him as a person. But in terms of him as a player at 25 years old, and the dearth of depth and young talent, especially in the backcourt and on the wings for this team, maybe they do have to bring him back or get that team option and exercise and play him just as a secondary playmaker and creator on this team, because they don't have a huge amount. And if he's not back, and look, maybe they say, yeah, we decline the team option, they sign him to a contract that's 3 years and $21 million or something, whatever it is. But I think that despite how bad he has been, and once they started to get players back healthy at the end of the year, his role decreased and decreased and decreased. He was playing like 35 minutes at a stretch. And once players came back, he couldn't hold off guys like Munford and Farmer and crap like that. He couldn't hold off players like that. So that makes me think they're not overly enamored with him. So there's a massive chance that he hasn't been brought back. We've got Bryce Cotton, who's a restricted free agent as well on this team. And he didn't do a huge amount, that's fair to say. He sort of bounced around the league. I thought he had some potential, but hasn't really shown it in his spots in Phoenix, and he had some time with the San Antonio Spurs last season as well. Didn't get on the court at all, but I think he was there in preseason. But a very interesting offseason for this team. They've also got a couple of guys on non-guaranteed deals. Jermichael Green, that'll almost definitely be guaranteed at under $1 million, and Vince Carter at $4 million. He is 39 years old. Will they guarantee his deal? They don't have many options. They don't have many players. So maybe they do bring Vince back at $4 million, which is a pretty reasonable deal, not expensive at all at this point. Let's look now at these players from a fantasy point of view. I'm not going to be going through all 28 of them because there's no need, because most of them aren't on the roster still. We'll start with Marc Gasol, who, as I mentioned, had that injury to the broken foot, which is a concern for a guy who's getting up there in age and is a 7 foot man that weighs a fair amount of weight. He's a big human, and breaking a foot is not a good sign. But he did finish the season as the 42nd ranked player in 9 cat leagues and 37th in 8 cat, but it's a drop from where he was the year before. He was 19th and 20th in 9 and 8 cat respectively. And even before that injury, he was struggling. He wasn't the same guy on defense. He wasn't as active. He just wasn't the same player, and it is a concern for a player who's just signed a big 5-year deal and is now coming off a broken foot. What do we make of him? What do we make of Marc Gasol moving forward? It's definitely a concern. He's 31 years old. He averaged less points. He averaged less rebounds, less blocks. He shot a worse percentage from the field. He did shoot a better free throw percentage, but overall wasn't his best campaign. I think that's fair to say. His on-off numbers were still solid, though. One of the best on the team at 4.2 points per 100 possessions. And his win shares were fourth on the team despite just playing 52 games. But even if you look at the top four players on this team in win shares, you have Conley at 56 games, Randolph at 68, Chalmers at 55, and Gasol at 52. So there wasn't much competition from players who played a lot. But he did play a fair few minutes, so his win shares per 48 are a little bit down the list. His box score plus minus was decent. It wasn't superb. It was a one, and he was actually a negative on offense. So definitely not the best season. And at 31 years old, coming off a broken foot, I don't imagine that Gasol comes back into second round calculations at all after this. I think I'd be a little bit surprised if we see him back in that second round. But getting him in the 40s or 50s, which I think is probably the reasonable spot, maybe even the 60s, you should be able to get solid numbers there. But he's always been a better rotisserie player to me just because of his even contributions across the board. Whereas in a head-to-head league, I'm not spending a top 50 pick on him. I wouldn't have thought anyway at this early stage. Mike Conley. Again, not a great season from Conley. He was okay. He averaged 15.5, 3 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.5 threes, 1.2 steals on 42 and 83. He's an extraordinarily low turnover point guard. So if you are playing in the 9-count roto format, he is a point guard that excels, because 1.5 turnovers per game as a starting point guard who then dishes 6 assists, that is ridiculously low. He hit 36% of his threes, and he ended up the 56th ranked player in 9-count and leagues and 64th in 8-count. 63rd in 8-count. And there is very few times that a starting point guard has a better 8-count ranking, a better 9-count ranking than 8-count ranking. He missed the end of the season with an Achilles problem. Never really mentioned what the actual injury was, just Achilles issues, Achilles soreness. Never said if there was a tear or anything or a strain or whatever it was. It was a weird situation, obviously, with him heading into free agency, with the injuries already stacking up. He wasn't going to risk himself and push himself through a catastrophic Achilles problem. In terms of what his numbers were like compared to the year before, he actually increased his assist numbers, got him up to 6.1. His steal numbers is something that has dropped. Now, back in 2011-12 and 12-13, he averaged over 2 steals a game, and he was one of the better defensive point guards out there. It's dropped the last 3 years, 1.5, 1.3, 1.2 steals. And you think that as he gets older, that sort of athleticism and playing the passing lanes does drop somewhat. His shooting percentages have dropped as well. He was down to 42% after being a mid-40s sort of player, but still a 36% shooter from three, a really solid free throw shooter. And he's a guy that you can get in those middle rounds around that same time that I mentioned with Marc Gasol, round 5, maybe even round 6, coming off an Achilles problem. If he goes to another team, a team that plays with more offensive focus, with a higher pace, then I can see Conley being a top 35, top 40 player quite comfortably. It really depends on where he ends up. If he's back in Memphis, then he's still going to remain in that 45 to 55, 60 range, I would say. If he goes somewhere else, then taking him inside the top 40 or hoping for top 40 value is not a crazy thing to say. He was easily the best player on this team in terms of his on-off numbers. If you exclude Jordan Adams' minuscule amount of minutes, he was 7.7 Conley in the on-off numbers. Zach Randolph. I thought Randolph was toast at the start of the season. He was poor. He got demoted to the bench for Matt Barnes to start because he was playing so bad. And he didn't have a great season. He's 34 years old, but he ended up the year ranked 98th in 9-count, 104th in 8-count leagues. I think that's probably about right, but he's never been a great fantasy player. He's always been an overrated fantasy player because he does two things. He gives you points and he gives you rebounds. And at the moment, even the rebounds are well down, 7.8. That's not a positive. Well, it is a positive, but it's not a massive positive. He doesn't give you steals. He doesn't block shots. His field goal percentage is below 50% and has been for the last 5 seasons. He's not an 80% free throw shooter. He's just an average guy there. He doesn't hit threes. So you're getting 15 and 8 out of him, which, good numbers. But people would look at him and say, I'm taking Zebo at pick 60. And it's never going to work out that way. At 34 years of age, he played 30 minutes a game. You would have to think that the arrow is again pointing down to Zebo. Whether David Fizdale comes in and looks at him and goes, okay, well, Zebo, you're 34. Let's get a little bit more out of you. Let's play you in a different way. But I just don't think that's going to happen. Zebo is Zebo. He can't jump. He's not athletic. He can't play defense. He will score. He will rebound. And he will do them at much lesser rates than what he was doing before. So to me, there's very little chance that I would take him inside the top 100 next season. Unless this team just clears out talent, he's the only one left and has to score points. But even then, I reckon they start looking more towards a player like Jermichael Green and seeing what he can bring to the table. Randolph had a 2.2 on-off number, which is not and it's okay. It's not. It's definitely not spectacular. He was solid in the win shares on this team, but his box score plus minus left a little bit to be desired because of his poor defense. He's a negative 1.1 defensively, giving him an overall negative number, but still a key contributor and a pretty decent PER of 18.3 for Randolph. Matt Barnes, 111th in 9-cat leagues, 109th in 8-cat leagues, really poor on off, a negative 5.4, but a lot of that is due to the fact that he was like last man standing for a lot of this season, and he was playing with players like Xavier Munford and Jordan Farmer and Briante Weber, who finished the season in Miami. Players who were just poor, and you see, if you look at his pre and post splits, 9-cat pre-All-Star, 86th, post-All-Star, 165th. So a big drop in that second half of the season when he was playing with nobody. But he still is a guy that can put up numbers, and he does go a little bit underrated to me in fantasy leagues. He played 29 minutes a game and averaged 10 and 5.5. He hit 1.5 threes, but this year he did it at 31%, whereas last year he was 36 and he'd been at 34 for the previous couple of seasons. Still gets a steal, still gets 0.7 blocks, but at 38% from the field, at his age, Matt Barnes is on the way down. He's not going to be a standard league player. He will struggle to be a top 150 player again. And I don't think that he's an unrestricted free agent, so he could go somewhere, but no one's going to sign him and go, we want Matt Barnes so he can play 32 minutes. That's not what any team's going to be looking at. They'll be looking at Matt Barnes to be a guy who plays 27 minutes and can come in and hit threes and hit them at a decent clip and be a solid defender. But at his age, we know that the decline should have already started. It hasn't really yet, but the shooting percentage drop is a bit of a sign and a bit of a concern, I would say. He was still a guy that was fairly important for this team, given that he sort of got them to the playoffs with all the players that were out. He posted a positive box score plus minus, but his win shares per 48 were one of the worst on the team, well below average. Down out of the 28 players that played games, he was 20th in that advanced metric for them, and posted a pretty putrid 11.7 PER. Not the greatest year from Barnes, but a lot of that was situation induced. Jordy Farmer is next on the rankings. He didn't play anywhere to start the season. Ended up as the 145th player in 9-cat and 132nd in 8-cat leagues. Cool. What does that mean? It doesn't really mean anything. He played 16 games and 25 minutes and averaged 8.5 points and 1.3 threes, 3.3 assists and a steal, 40%, and didn't miss a free throw all season. Like, whoop-de-doo. Cool. Where's Jordan Farmer going to be? Now, he's better than some of the other backups that are in the NBA, and if Mike Conley happens to leave, I don't hate him still sticking around and being a player who has to play for this team, but he was brought in as a legit fifth option when guys kept falling down. He had a negative 9.7 in his on-off numbers, which is obviously terrible, but again, so much of this to do with who else was around on this team. Farmer was decent, but he definitely wasn't spectacular, and I don't think there's really, even if you're going to be in the Red Rock 30 team league, which is going to be drafting 390 players, I'm not sure there's really much point to be looking at Jordan Farmer and thinking, yeah, this guy's a player who's going to comfortably sit inside the top 200, because yes, he was comfortably inside the top 200 this year, but that's a bunch of situations that literally have never happened in the NBA before. For that to happen, I think you'll be I think you're dreaming if you think that's going to happen again. Brandon Wright. What a disaster of a season this was for Brandon Wright. He played only 12 games with multiple knee problems, only 18 minutes a game when he did play. He averaged 7 points and 3.6 rebounds and 1.3 blocks, half a steal, shot 67% from the field, doesn't turn the ball over. He finished 180th in 9-cat leagues. He finished 201st in 8-cat leagues. But the guy just can't stay healthy. To me, he's never going to be a player who can approach 30 minutes a game. He's more going to be someone who is that bench guy who plays 21, 22 minutes, a great field goal percentage bump guy, a nice shot blocker. Never going to be a big scorer. He's not a super aggressive rebounder. And this season wasn't good. I think that's probably the best way that I can put it. He did struggle. Now, in terms of box score plus minus, he was pretty good. So he was decent in that stat. And his win shares per 48, again, one of the top players on this team. So despite me saying all these things that he just struggled and he can be a bit overrated in fantasy, given the way that he played this season, I think that his value is going to be down. Now, Chris Anderson won't be back. Marc Gasol is going to be, you would think, struggling somewhat with a foot problem. So does Wright go unnoticed? Maybe, but despite his in rankings, and you've seen rankings for him in the past, he's ranked 130th, he's ranked 120th. I would never take him in a standard league because so much of his value comes from the fact that he literally never turns the ball over. He is the best player in the league at not turning the ball over, and that's fine, but it does skew overall ranking numbers. He averaged 0.8 turnovers a game, which is, again, it was his second highest positive contribution behind field goal percentage. In previous years in his career, it had been his highest contributor. And to me, that does not, like, when that skews your stats and skews your rankings, it does not warrant me picking him when he's giving me 6 points and four rebounds and a block and 67%, but coming on four attempts, which is not a big swing for that category. So to me, even if he comes back in a backup role, and even if his rankings and his projections look like he's a pick 130, he's just not a standard league guy to me, and I'll never be convinced of that. Yes, he's a great option in a deeper dynasty, he's a decent stream option, and I think he'll be a little bit underrated coming into the season, but not underrated enough where I have to go, oh, let's get me some Brandon Wright into my team. He was a team worst, well, actually not team worst, because Bryce Cotton had a negative 88.7 on off, which is obviously ridiculous considering he played in three games, but Brandon Wright was a negative 10.3. Let's get on to Lance Stephenson now. Actually, don't miss someone. Yes, I did. I missed Tony Allen. Let's talk Tony Allen, who struggled early on and battled a lot of hamstring problems, came back at the end and started putting together some pretty decent offensive numbers. He finished the season in post-All-Star rankings 86th and 77th in 8-cat leagues, and or 9-cat and 8-cat respectively, overall 151st in 9-cat leagues, and put up 8.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, got 1.7 steals at 45%. He actually hit 0.23s, which is a bit of a surprise for Tone Allen. But again, another guy that's 34 years old. Where does this bring it? He doesn't score. He only scored 8.3 points. He doesn't really rebound. But 4.5 for a shooting guard's not terrible. No assists. And the steal numbers is what you come from. But even then, at 1.7, it's a decrease from the 2 that he got last year. The field goal percentage went from 50 down to 45. It's a big drop. But I think some of that, again, is due to the fact of him taking on an additional role on a team that was struggling with injuries. He's not someone that's ownable, I don't think, in a standard league format. His value is going to come from steals, and that's literally it. Everything else is a negative across the board for him. So, yeah, I'm on a Saturday-Sunday situation. The Grizzlies are playing back-to-backs. Let's get Allen in. Let's get four steals out of him, maybe, and let's piss him off for the next week. That's sort of where he's going to be. So I'm not going to look at his post-All-Star and go, ooh, 86, that's pretty good for Tone Allen. 77, even better in 8-cat. Let's then think he's a top 100 player. He's not. He's going to be a year older. Hopefully the Grizzlies look to bring someone in to sort of challenge him for minutes, and hopefully that player that challenges for minutes is Jordan Adams, who we've seen nothing of at all over the last couple of seasons. But Allen is a guy that is going to get by with his steal numbers, but he provides nothing else to fantasy teams, and that's a real bad negative to me. The next player is Lance Stephenson, who had, it's fair to say, a terrible year. Started off the year in Los Angeles with the Clippers, ended up coming across to Memphis in that Jeff Green trade, and ended up being poor. Again, 240th for the season, but post-All-Star 151. But when you're coming across post-All-Star to a team with so many injuries and you got so much high hopes, and he's another one of these players, like a Tony Roten, who gets extra love from people. I don't know. I don't really. Again, I think it's because of the way that he plays, street ball mentality, that sort of play. When people look at him and go, yes, Lance Stephenson, come on, let's get him. It's all Stephenson all the way. Yeah, it was when he was playing 37 minutes a night. But as soon as anyone who could walk within the guard position came back, his minutes went down. 35, 30, 29, 27, 21, 22. And they just stayed around that 22 level because he's not good. He had one good season in Indiana. And yes, he was pretty good there. But even then, he was overhyped in that season. He played 20 minutes a game here, 8.6 points, 3 rebounds, 1.9 assists, 0.6 steals, doesn't hit threes, he was at 0.4 there, 0.1 blocks, 49 and 78. So really good percentages, obviously. 49 and 78 is fantastic, and actually hit his threes at 39% after shooting, I think, 10% last season when he was in Charlotte. But I don't believe in Lance Stephenson. Yes, he is young. Yes, he can get better, but the way that things sort of transitioned for him in Memphis, when guys like Tony Allen started returning and he started losing playing time to Jordan Farmer, it makes me think that, well, I suppose Dave Yeager's not there. Maybe Fizdale has a different opinion. I doubt it, but maybe he does. And maybe Stephenson plays himself into a 27-minute role. It's an ultimate gamble, and you hope that he can become that guy in Indiana. And even then, people were acting like he was a top 50, top 40 player when he wasn't, because he does some things well, and he does some things horrifically bad, much like getting steals as a guard. he's really poor at, but he has improved his free throw percentage. So that's something I do give him credit for, given he hadn't hit over 75% in a season since 2010, and he got back up to 78 this year. So that is an improvement, but no steals, no blocks, really low assist numbers again, and doesn't hit three. So a guy that I'm not high on, I'm not a huge fan on of him, and interesting to see sort of what happens with him, what they do with that team option. His advanced numbers, they were okay-ish. He does still struggle defensively. He was a negative 1.2 box score plus minus and a negative 1.3 defensively in that area. Just a 17.1 PER, so pretty okay in that area, and a 1.2 win shares in his 26 games. So overall, he was okay, and he was much better, obviously, in Memphis than he was in Los Angeles or in Charlotte. But that's not to say that he was good by any stretch of the imagination. Let's look at the next player, who is Jermichael Green. Now, Green had a real breakout this season when Zach Randolph went down and when Marc Gasol was down. We saw some extra playing time for Jermichael. He ended up with a really good on-off number of 1.8. His post-All-Star ranking was 142 and 152 in 8 cat leagues, and looked, you know, solid at times. He played all 82 games. He played 19 minutes, had 7.5 and 4.5 points, half a steal, half a block, 47 and 74, and hit 0.2 threes. I think that there's something to like about Jermichael Green. I think that he can develop into a guy, and he never really showed much in terms of defensive ability until this season, but he can turn into a guy that could be a steal and a block per game guy with solid percentages and be a pretty aggressive rim runner, decent scorer, decent rebounder. In 30 minutes, I could expect him going for 12 and 7, getting a steal, getting a block, and shooting good percentages, and being a guy who sneaks into that top 100. Now, with Randolph around, it's going to be hard for him to approach 30 minutes, which is what I think he's going to need to really be that guy. And even at the end of the season, he started to tail off as well with most of the Memphis players. But something that, at least it was a young player who started to show something, which we haven't really seen at all in Memphis over the last, I don't know, 4 or so seasons. His advanced numbers were pretty poor. Almost average in defensive box score plus minus, so that's okay. Win shares put up 2.6, which is one of the top numbers on the team. In fact, fifth behind Conley, Randolph, Gasol, and Chalmers. So that's pretty handy to have a player who's able to do that. But overall, I do think that he's going to be a guy, but I think it's going to take 2 seasons for him to really start to put together some decent numbers or some decent fantasy usability. I think at this point we've still got a little bit to wait for him. But in a dynasty, he's a decent investment who should put up top 170 value this season. I would top 175 value, and then we might see him as a top 100 player the year after. That would be my guess. Vince Carter was really, really poor his first season in Memphis. Turned it up a bit here, played 64 games at 17 minutes, hit a 3 a game, which in 17 minutes is great considering how bad this team is at shooting threes. One of probably the worst 3-point shooting team in the NBA. 7 points, 2.5 rebounds, 0.6 steals, 39 and 85. But if you're relying on Vince Carter at 40 years of age to be your 3-point shooter and to be your offensive spacer, then I think you're in a lot of trouble. He did rank as 145th post All-Star, and he was a sneaky option for 14 and probably 16, no, definitely 16, 14 team leagues, and even some 12 team formats and DFS situations. But it's going to be real tough to rely on Vince Carter. And again, so many of these post All-Star splits are skewed heavily by the fact that, you know, Gasol wasn't there, Conley wasn't there, Randolph was out, Allen was out for half of this time. So it's really hard to get a read on this. I don't think that there's any way you can think that Carter's numbers are going to be heading up next season. The next player, Xavier Munford, looked okay. He's a real struggle offensively, averaging just 5.5 points in his 19 minutes. He finished the season as the 308th ranked player in 9 cat leagues. Yeah, I think his best role is a third point guard. He showed a lot defensively, averaging 1.1 steals in 19 minutes is good, but 39% from the field, 44% from the free throw line. These are terrible numbers, and his offense was really, it really did struggle. But he showed enough that he can stick in the NBA, but offensively, he's terrible. Defensively, really good, but that's going to limit what he can do, especially on a team who just has nothing in terms of shooting. You should be able to shoot to be able to get some sort of role on a team whose main players can't do it, whereas he just comes in and gives more of the same, just more defense, and you've got to be able to do something. So I'm not a huge fan. His advanced numbers, again, defensively, they look great. Offensively, they look fairly poor, and a PER of just 9.9 is not ideal for Munford, so I don't think there's much to get too excited about with him. much like the rest of these players I'm going to talk about, Chris Anderson, the Birdman, was 259th in 9-cat and 298th in 8-cat. He won't play as many minutes next season, if he plays at all. 16 minutes a game in 31 games, 4-4, averaging half a block and half a steal at 51%. I think it's going to be really, really tough to have him anywhere even near the top 350 players next season. PJ Hairston, who's an unrestricted free agent, you would think they'd try to bring him back, but I guess it depends on what else is out there. He showed bits and pieces as a defender in Charlotte. He averaged 1-3 a game in just under 20 minutes, 6 points, half a steal, but still shot 36% from the field, which needs to have improved in your second season. In terms of what Hairston was able to do, As a advanced stats, he was the worst player on this team for Winchester's worst. He was a negative, and that's real tough to do. He was also the third worst player in box score plus minus. So maybe, you know, maybe looking at this, maybe they don't bring him back. A PER of 5.7. He played 18 games for the Grizzlies. He wasn't great. He wasn't great in Charlotte. He seems to be getting, much like Noel Vonleh, got minutes and starts gifted to him when he did nothing to deserve them. So my hope for him is not high. Jordan Adams, on the other hand, I do think that Adams has got some potential. We barely have seen him with knee problems. He was an 8.7 in his on-off numbers. He's still ranked 378th in 9-cat and 346th in 8-cat leagues, and did not play at all after the All-Star break. We barely saw Jordan Adams on the court. He played 2 games. He played just 15 minutes in total. He did average 3.5 points, 1.5 steals. Didn't hit a 3. What do you do? If you can get him for free in a real cheap, or get him for free in a dynasty league, there's an opportunity. Tony Allen's not going to be around forever. Vince Carter, these are the two players who are ahead of him on the depth chart. Matt Barnes, these are the players ahead of him. He's got to be able to get an opportunity. And whenever I've seen him play in summer league, he's looked really good, but he's never been able to stay on the court in Memphis at all. And you could find yourself maybe not with a top 150 player, but maybe a top 250 player next season. And I think that coming into his third season, yes, he's missed a lot of time. He could be a player that shows some sort of surprising ability. And they don't have young players. So he is sort of the hope for this team as to whether he can come forward and do something. Jarrell Martin, the last player I want to talk about here, he played 29 games at 15 minutes. His rank was not ideal, 356 and 351st in 9 and 8 cat leagues. Played 15 minutes at 5.6 points with 3 rebounds. Defensively, he doesn't do a huge amount, not the best in terms of efficiency offensively, but he had his moments, but overall the moments weren't good enough. He should clearly be behind Jermichael Green, and whether they bring him back or not, again, remains up in the air whether he comes back for next season. He was decent, but not enough for I look at him and go, you know what, he's going to be a future starter in this league. I can see that with Green. I can't really see that with Jarrell Martin, but he did miss a big chunk of the season to start with a foot injury, and that did cost him some development. He's only young. He's only 21 years of age. So I think that we're going to see with Martin, it might take 3 more years for him to really develop into something. So he's not bad of a guy to hold on to. And with depth on this team, or everything on this team being a concern, I do think that you can have some hope for him potentially being a top 150 guy at some stage in his career. But it feels like it's just a little bit of a way off. I might type him into my player comp machine and seeing which players he comes up with. And the top 3, you know, comps for him: Glenn Davis, Samardo Samuels, Robin Lopez, and Jordan Hill's in there. And that's the sort of player he can beat. That guy who fills in a role in 16 team leagues, maybe jumps it up to 12 team leagues for 1 or 2 seasons. So not a bad lot of player comps. Showed some signs, but nothing to get me overly excited. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk about your questions and a player that they did have who they played the entire season in the D-League, and that is Andrew Harrison. This is the part with just the guitar. While we wait on the bass and drums, I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come and now, me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus that you know, you can't see what I see. Just like a moment in the sun. Harrison is the first player I want to talk about here, who the Grizzlies got on a draft day trade. He played the entire season in the D League, played 46 games there, and actually looked okay. And again, with this team crying out for young guys who can handle the ball and can shoot, Harrison might have a role. He shot 37% from three in the D League. He played the 46 games. He played 35 minutes a contest, averaged 18.5, 4.5 rebounds, 5 assists, 1.5 steals, and shot 78 from the line, 37 from the 3-point line, and 44 overall from the field. Had really nice advanced numbers as well, good win shares, good box scores, solid PER, great true shooting. So maybe that 1 year of seasoning in the D League for Harrison is enough for him to be brought up. And again, the players ahead of these guys, Farmer, Carter, Allen, Barnes, these guys are all 35, 34, like old players. And Harrison could come in and play a pretty significant role next season. And by significant, I mean maybe he plays 17 minutes, maybe he plays 20 minutes as a guy who has somewhat of a role as a backup one, but he's more of a two, so maybe more of a backup two. And it's not like their two-guard spot is locked down at this stage. So Andrew Harrison's a guy that I think you should keep your eye on in your really deep dynasty leagues. He's not going to be threatening the top 100 in the next couple of seasons, I wouldn't have thought. But he's going to be a player who should be able to contribute at an NBA level next season. Let's look at the questions that you guys have. The first comes from Steve Burns. He says, as a native Memphian, and that is such a good word to me. I don't know what I would have called someone from Memphis, but Memphian, I do enjoy it. As a native Memphian and a Grizz fan, I often wonder who's calling the shots. A lot of questionable trades and draft selections. I talked about the draft selections. Yeah, I agree. There's been some weird ones, but a lot of them, they haven't had luck. Jordan Adams might turn. I think Jordan Adams can still be really good, and it hasn't worked out. Jarrell Martin dealt with the foot problem. Trades, yeah, maybe not so much. The Jeff Green trade wasn't terrible. Jeff Green was terrible. Getting a first round pick there wasn't bad, but I think they need to do more. They need to be, and it's hard given the instability in the front office with ownership, with general managers and Robert Parra, and the situation with Dave Yeager. It is a little bit of a concern about trying to attract people to Memphis, but they have to do better with their draft picks. They have to really make sure they nail this pick 17 and hope they get a little bit of luck on their side and it turns into someone who's a real top level contributor. Beben, who's on Twitter at BebenBadass. Where should we draft Marc Gasol next year? I covered that. I think he's going to be a player that you can possibly slip outside the top 50, probably in that fifth, maybe sixth round range. I think if you get him in the sixth round, it's going to be a bargain, but probably that fifth round is the right spot for Marc Gasol. Darren Perry says, what is Conley's future? I reckon he's still an over 50% chance of remaining in Memphis, but earlier in the year, we said no chance he goes anywhere. But now, with the way things have been handled in Memphis, that there's a huge chance that he doesn't return. But for now, I would put, if I'm putting money on it, I wouldn't be confident, but I'd be putting money on him staying in Memphis. Joseph Diffenbach says, what style do you say David Fizdale running? And will anyone sans Marc Gasol be worth drafting next year? Well, it depends. Conley's going to be worth drafting if he returns to this team. Zebo with a last pick, maybe, but I'm not sure I really love picking him with a last pick because the upside just isn't there. If you go deep, then Adams and Harrison come into consideration. But at this point, everything's so in flux with the way that this team is and players who may or may not be back and players who might be brought in that it's really tough to say. But Conley and Gasol are going to be the only players really who are going to sit in that top 100 of players. Now, we had one more question, and it's from JJ Baker, who's on Twitter at JJ_P_Baker. He says, what two non-Grizz players should be the top targets in free agency realistically? I like that you put the realistically part there. I wouldn't mind them trying to see if they can get Eric Gordon on a decent short-term prove-it deal. He would fit really well in terms of being able to at least do something offensively and to score and to hit threes. Yes, his defense is a worry, but the rest of your team is so good defensively. Maybe you can absorb Eric Gordon being out there and whiffing on a lot of issues. Who else do you look at? Do you look at Ryan Anderson off the bench as another guy who can stretch the floor, maybe open things up for Marc Gasol to run more of the offense and create a bit more space for him down low? That's another thing. But again, his defense is really, really poor. But it can be dealt with in other spots, and maybe that's taking away development time from Jermichael Green. So maybe that's a little bit of a concern. I think I know that they need a backup point guard. I know that Mario Chalmers has gone without Achilles problem. So a guy like Grievous Vasquez in a short-term deal, even Brandon Jennings wouldn't be a horrible guy to bring in. But if if Conley goes, they're in a lot of trouble. I wouldn't want Vasquez or Jennings either being my starting point guard. So there's a concern with the way this team runs. I don't mind Jared Dudley on a cheap deal. I think he would be a really good fit to play as a backup four as well, and maybe a little bit of three. We know what he can do as a teammate. Defensively, he fits in. Shooting-wise, I think he's a pretty decent player. Well, I know he's a pretty decent player shooting-wise, and going after one of the restricted free agents. Evan Fournier is the guy who I bring up all the time. I really think that he can thrive in, maybe not thrive necessarily, but he would be a huge upgrade in terms of offensive creativity and scoring and shooting that this team desperately needs. So he'd be a guy that I'd be seeing if the Magic aren't all that keen on re-signing. We are done here, guys. Memphis, a real weird season for them. Fantasy-wise, they're a little bereft of talent at this point, and they could be one of the teams that goes last in the Red Rock 30-team dynasty. Remember, if you are interested, check out all the details at the start of this program or when I talked about it more in-depth at the start of the Houston Rockets season in review. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball, and Facebook is facebook.com/redrockbasketball. Of course, you know Fantrax is the place to go to start up your leagues, dynasty, or standard, and make sure you're checking out Basketball Monster as well. Enjoy the NBA finals as they go on. Check out the draft preview pod I did with Sam Vecini. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.